And those are some of the new threats to freedom, according to this new book. The book's editor is Adam Bellow. He joins us now, along with one of the 30 authors who wrote essays in the book, Michael Moynihan of Reason Magazine. So, Michael, your essay was titled The New Anti-Capitalists. So who are they and what do they want?
The same as the old anti-capitalists, actually. But, you know, as you said, in 1991, when the Soviet Union fell, our enemy fell, and it was an amazing period for capitalism, for free markets.
I thought we'd won.
Well, I thought we'd won, too. But unfortunately, we have the financial crisis right now, and that has brought back a lot of anti-capitalist sentiment. The people in the academy, the people in Hollywood, like Michael Moore, who made a film denouncing capitalism, have come out of the woodwork to say that this is our time. This is our time. We cannot waste this time and make short work of ending capitalism.
And Adam, you're the editor of these 30 essays. What's the big threat in your mind?
Well, there is no one big threat, and this is one of the important themes of the book. As you pointed out in your introduction, 30 years ago, during the Cold War, the threats to freedom, as we understood them, were large, external, looming threats. Communism, prior to that, fascism. Now, what we find in our 30 contributions is that threats to freedom have sort of gone, gone viral. They have gone into the culture. They take the form of threats to our rights, threats to the entrepreneurial spirit, threats to our sovereignty.
Let's break it down. What do you mean threats to our rights?
Well, one of the themes that runs through the book is the idea that rights have been inverted. That we now have, instead of freedom. To do things. We have freedom from things. We used to be free to fail. Now we have freedom from failure.
Well, free to fail doesn't sound like a good thing.
But it is a good thing, because if we don't have a culture in which we're allowed to fail, whether it's in our educational system or in business or in sports, then we don't ever really learn to overcome. We don't know what our limitations are. We don't learn to overcome them.
And when I look at this pile of just this year's new regulations, 70,000 pages, they're all well-intended, but it's the death of freedom by a thousand little cuts.
Yes. That's absolutely right.
That's right. For example, one of our contributors writes about his attempt to make and sell his own barbecue sauce. He lives in North Carolina. He makes a wicked barbecue sauce. And he decides to call up the county and to find out, what do I have to do in order to be allowed to sell my barbecue sauce at the county fair? Well, you need to have your kitchen inspected. You need to have a business license. You need to show proof of insurance. And before you know it, you find that you can't afford to do any of these things. Now, this isn't...
So he doesn't try.
Well, he...
We don't get the business.
So we don't get the business. That's right. So this is a harm to the entrepreneurial spirit. Used to be that, you made your product, you took it to the county fair, you bartered with your neighbors. Many great American businesses have started that way. And it really isn't so much an argument that there should be no regulation. The argument is that once you start down that path, you can't stop. There's no way. The urge to regulate encompasses sooner or later everything that used to be considered part of the private sphere.
And on your list in your book, food bans, fluorescent light bulbs, the green economy and its rules.
It used to be, we used to define freedom in this country as the freedom to choose. We had free choice in every respect. Now we are finding that our choices are being limited increasingly for our own benefit by faceless bureaucrats up in Albany or in Washington, D.C., because they feel that we are not rational, that we're not going to make healthy, proper choices. So they are sort of rigging the game.
When you allow the government to adjudicate these things and dictate that we know better than you do, and, humans do make flawed choices, what we end up, it seems ludicrous, but I'll tell you what, I mean, the trans fat ban would have seemed ludicrous 10, 15 years ago. We had a New York City councilor that suggested, and this didn't go anywhere, but God knows how it's going to go in 10, 15 years from now, had suggested banning salt from restaurants.
Yes, and fortunately it hasn't happened yet.
It hasn't happened yet, but I mean, you see this impulse, you see where it goes.
For the first time, I see a resistance movement in the Tea Parties. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard to know what the Tea Parties are mainly about, but at least some people are saying, it's too big, they're doing too much. Mm-hmm. We're ticked off.
Yeah, I think it's the the fundamental American idea of freedom can be summed up as, in the words, leave me alone, stay out of my way, don't interfere with me, and I won't interfere with you. That's what people
want.
That
hasn't been the trend.
Not
passively accepted politicians.
That's
controlling
right.
But I think you might have just answered your own question. It hasn't been the trend. And I think that there is at some point a tipping point. People are saying enough is enough because, you know, our children are going to wallow in debt as our grandchildren are. And for what? We're buying car companies and, you know, creating mammoth health care bills and nobody knows what their services they're getting. So, I mean, I think that that resistance is the kind of stopgap. This is it.
But by the same token, John, there are a lot of people who want their freedom to be limited. They want the state to step in and protect them to make them feel secure.
Well, we have to educate them.
Yes, we do. Fortunately, there's a book people can buy and read about it.
Coming up, some new, specific, insidious threats to freedom from people like the food police, Michael referred to that, and the speech police, when we return.